across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Once again, it is so wonderful to have you all here because I know that you and I are out here experiencing life together. And that's really what this show is all about, is the idea of experiencing life. Because when we look at our world and we get caught up in the real world menagerie that just keeps us bound in a cycle that is leading to nothing spiritual or soulful in your life, then we need to change that. And the only way to change that is by getting out there and experiencing life. Now, tonight we're going to talk with Mike Clellan, and he is an experiencer. And we get to flip the script a little bit, because a few years back, Mike had me on his show. His website's hiddenexperience.blogspot.com, and his new book is The Messenger. The Messengers, excuse me, let me get that correct. The Messengers, Owls, Synchronicity, and the UFO Abductee. Now, many of us know that if you were to plant an owl out on top of a building, this would detract birds from landing on top of that building. What you might not realize is that the reason the birds avoid the owl is not because they had ever been attacked by an owl ever in their lives, or even possibly seen an owl in that little bird's experience, but they have genetic memory of that predator in their soul, in their very genetic makeup. They have a fear of that owl. Now, when we look back to history, we can see our leaders going to Bohemian Grove and worshiping under a 40-foot stone owl. And I've investigated this question, and I've looked deep into why and who and where these connections come in, and it's so elusive. But we know the owl connects to the goddess. We know she goes to Columbia, Minerva, Athena, all the way back. And we know that the owl is the sign of secret knowledge and seeing the world in a full perspective and bringing light to darkness. So tonight we are going to talk with Mike Clellan about his book, The Messengers, Owl Synchronicity and the UFO Abductee, and we're going to discuss the experiences that led to the writing of this 400-page tome. And we're going to explore the ideas of synchronicity and how this all comes together and really start to relate a deeper meaning to this owl than even I had ever considered. So please, welcome to the show, Mike Clellan. It's wonderful to have you on this side of the mic, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You might have heard during your introduction there, I should have muted. There was a someone just stepped into the room and said hello. So I'm not
no
sure if you
worries.
Heard that.
We're okay. All friends here. This is a friendly time. And, you know, let's just put all the BS aside. We don't need to act like we're super professionals. We're here to change the world. We're here to experience this life to its fullest. And I think that's what most people miss on their time here on planet Earth, wouldn't you say?
I would say that there is a, the sense of mission is, you know, priority number one for me. You know, like I feel like I have, you know, there's a purpose and a reason for this stuff. I'm not quite sure what it is sometimes, but all I can do is press forward.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's an amazing thing because really you have this foundation of being somewhat of a survivalist or an urban shaman. You have this freedom that is in your soul so that you can break the bounds of the real world box and see things existing in life. You experience nature right there in your hands, and this just brings about a completely different mindset to life in general, right?
Well, I mean, this is the stuff that I did outside, the outdoor work that I did, you know, had a huge impact on the way I lead my life, you know, just as far as it, I mean, I spent years of my life working outside and camping, and it, you know, so when you do that, you take one spoon and one cup, and that's what you eat out of for a month. And, you know, survivalist is the wrong term. I mean, we ate pretty well, and we were, you know, had really, you know, high quality camping gear and such. But what it taught me in a way was just how little you needed you know, how few things you need to be truly happy. And I think I think for some reason that's gotten all flipped upside down. There's this illusion that people, the more you have, the happier you are. And that was just the opposite from my direct experience.
Oh, I've completely found that to be the case, Mike. Every time I toss my life aside a bunch of times and just gone full quote unquote rainbow, where I'm just an urban shaman wandering this earth. And I always gather with the Rainbow Family in July at the National Forest, and that has taught me this same lesson. When you see a community existing in the basic form, then you see that the kitchen is the heart of the community. Without a doubt, everything starts at the kitchen, at the food, at the love that's put into that. And then with Rainbow, you can see that every creed, every ethnicity, every religion can gather together there and live harmoniously without any conflict. And so you get this idea, oh my God, you know, there's human. So what is this that I have to deal with when I have to go to a 9-to-5 every day? I'm running on a treadmill trying to keep up with my bills. I can't stand still. How can I stand still if I want to stay still, right? There's no way. And yeah, that first step right there of knowing just the basic needs of human life and then branching out from that. So let's go ahead and take this from your experience of finding freedom, of understanding true liberty, to going to UFO abductions.
So in my life, there were a handful of memories that kind of haunted me, so three in particular. One was seeing a craft at night in the night sky that promptly disappeared. I would have been about 12 years old. Another was a missing time event that was associated with this weird orange flash in the sky. I was also around 12 years old. And then a third event, I was 30, and I woke up in the middle of the night and sat up in bed and looked out the window, and there were 5 gray aliens walking towards the house. They were backlit by a bright white light. Couldn't really tell what that light was. It would have been perfect if it was like a landed flying saucer. It's not what I saw. It just seemed like a light source kind of off in the edge of the yard. And
I got to ask you real quick. I've had a UFO experience, and it requires me to continually tell myself that this was a reality. Did you find that your brain kind of revolted against this learning, you know, seeing this actual event?
Yes. So that actual event, it was, I've struggled with this and it's hard to articulate. So that event, sitting up in bed. So here, I'll just tell the whole thing. So there I am. I was living in, rural Maine, off in the forest. And I wake up in the middle of the night because there's a bright white light shining in the room. Like it's casting. And my first thought was that, you know, the way the bedroom window was, it could have been a car pulling into the driveway. So it wasn't quite the right line of light, but it could have been. So, and I sat up and I immediately, the way the bed was situated, was pressed up right against the, I have no idea what time it was, but the bed was pressed up against the window, right? So all you had to do is just sit up and you were looking right out the window. The immediate thing I saw were these 5 classic gray aliens, and I was completely void of any emotion, right? This should have been super freaky and scared me, and like, you know, I should have jumped out of bed and locked the doors and grabbed a baseball bat. I didn't. I remained weirdly detached. Now, there was this mood that was associated with this that I'll get back to in a second. So I look past the beings that are walking towards the house, and I look at this light, which is about the size of a washing machine, and it's just this glowing light. And I hear this voice in my head that says, "Now is the time to put your head on the pillow and shut down." And that's exactly what I did. I simply, you know, close my eyes and put my head on the pillow, and poof, I was out instantly. So this whole thing maybe lasted tops 30 seconds. Now, the sensation I had at the time was very weird. It was very, everything was eerily quiet. Everything was hyper clear. The normal kind of thought chatter in my mind was gone. It was this very streamlined, calm sensation. I have talked to other people about this and said, you know, have you, like, who've had, you know, close encounters that they all tell about, and I'll say, have you ever had this odd experience where it's like, it feels like reality is distorted? You know, I'm not sure if it was me that was distorted, but it felt like reality, and people will, and oftentimes they'll agree, and they'll, and they will both try to talk to each other about the sensations. Very difficult to articulate. One woman, her name is Brigitte Barclay. She's a experiencer from England. She described it as, you know, she took her hands and she said, you know, you take two magnets and they click together, right? And then you flip them around and reverse the poles and you try to push them together. And there's that weird undulating kind of tension or energy that's kind of warbling in the middle. You know what I'm talking about. She said that when she was having close up UFO experiences, it felt like she was inside, in between the magnets, in that warbling energy. And when she said that, I was like, that is exactly what it felt like. And I knew instantly that her and I were both struggling to talk about the same experience or the same sensation. That would have been, that event happened, I was 30 years old, and that was 1993. I'm 53 now. That experience, like the next morning, I totally just dismissed this as a dream. No way, absolutely no way, can't be true, didn't happen. I never even bothered to go out and look at the footprints in the snow. It would have been wintertime, probably January or February of 93. So I do know what you're saying. And what it is that, like, yeah, I have other experiences of seeing things, and I know exactly what you're talking about, where you just dismiss it. Like, oh, well, that sure looks like a landed flying saucer, but it can't be. That's impossible. Couldn't be. It's got to be something else. It's a house. It's a house up on a hill. That's what I'm seeing. I did have that experience. Oddly enough, that experience was on March 10th, which is today, in 2013, which is 6 years ago. Excuse me, 3 years ago. So 3 years ago today, I had that experience.
Well, let me throw a few things in here real quick. I don't know if you know this because we talked about it on your show, but of course it was years ago. But my UFO abduction event occurred in 1993 as well.
Oh, interesting. I think we did talk about that. And yours was on the beach in Florida.
Right.
Daytona
exactly.
Beach?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, okay. All right. So that's pretty bizarre. And I once had an urban shaman supply me some salvia divinorum. And this is known, folks, as the diviner's sage. And it is a plant that you burn very hot into a pipe, you know, like you would be smoking marijuana, only you have to burn salvia at a much higher heat. Anyway, I tried this salvia, and it gave me that exact magnetic force that you're talking about, like I was in between two magnetic polarities that seem to be ripping my body apart. Now, let me tell you, folks, I will never, ever get anywhere near salvia ever again. I will not allow it anywhere near me, okay? That was how dramatic this event was for me. I had left my body. I went amnesiac. I was gone. I returned to this sweating body of my own going, what just happened? And the thing of it is we're talking about dimethyltryptamine, DMT, a chemical within the brain that, you know, triggers these type of psychoactive events. And many people who are taking and smoking DMT or salvia are reporting meeting extraterrestrial creatures, especially praying mantis type beings while on DMT. And so for you to talk about that magnetic force, that polarity, this is the only experience I have in my life, is by triggering the DMT in my brain using this diviner sage and being thrown into an alternate reality that was horrifying. And on one more note on that, So that's one layer of this extraterrestrial psychoactive type situation, because we know there is some sort of connection between DMT and the UFO experience. And then on the other layer, what you were talking about with looking at it and going, well, I know it wasn't what I think I saw, but it is what I saw. I do have video footage of a giant V-shaped craft flying over our car as we were going to give a conference in Oregon. And I didn't get the craft on film because it just didn't show up on my camera. But I decided to record the passengers that were with me. To record their experience of seeing such a thing. Now, for me, I've already had a few experiences, and this one I felt was not extraterrestrial. I felt this was high military craft. It was a big V-shaped craft. It was pretty much exactly what they described for the Phoenix Lights.
Okay, so let me just interrupt. So you're it's an intuitive feeling. I remember we talked about this. That happened near Salt Lake, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That was Ogden, Utah.
Okay, so so your intuitive sense was this is military, not this is like, you know, the kind of hair on the back of your neck stands up and you're like, oh my God, I'm seeing something, you know, beyond this reality kind of feeling.
Exactly. So okay. The first one I saw in 93, no way that was Earth. You know, that was no way that was Earth-based technology. But this one, anti-gravity, simple. It looked like, you know, what you would expect of a modern TRV, you know, the next steps in that. And so, yeah, I absolutely had the feeling. But the curious part was the reaction of the passengers in the car, who immediately started debating an invisible foe, saying, well, it wasn't helicopters. It wasn't, you know, whatever. They just started to debate this invisible foe. Everybody in the car knew what they saw, so I don't know who they were fighting with. But I got all that on film, and I'm waiting for them to describe what they saw. I'm filming them without them knowing. And they never do describe it, so I have to kind of egg them on and have them describe. And so there's that whole situation where, I mean, the brain just really, we are so conditioned to having a rational world, and it's so not rational out there, is it, Mike?
I agree. That's actually in that there's a fellow named Peter Robbins who used to work with Bud Hopkins, who's done a ton of UFO research, and he talks about that checklist, and he's heard it from witnesses many times where they see something odd in the sky and they have to go, oh, well, it's not a balloon. It's not a helicopter. It's not a cloud. It's not a, you know, and then they go, once they get to the end of that checklist, then they're exhausted, you know, then they realize, like, you know, what I guess is what it's exactly what you're saying. It's like the human mind is wants there to be a tidy order to things. And when that, you know, when you're confronted with something that doesn't fit in the, you know, within that tidy logic and that tidy order, you know, it can be, you know, I mean, your sense of reality crumbles.
Absolutely. And so here you are, you've just now seen grays. You're discussing, that sent you on a mission, right? Now you're out seeking other experiencers to try and confirm and understand your experience. Is that what happened?
Not necessarily. No, actually, I managed to fully deny that experience. That was 1993. It was well into 2006 before I started looking at my own experiences. So that's, what is that, 13 years later? Yeah, so 13 years later, I was just like that. I just clamped the lid on that. I nailed the lid shut. I glued the edges of the lid, and it was like, man, that was not going to deal with that. And at the same time, I was reading UFO books compulsively, especially the abduction books. But the thought that it might happen to me, I guess I could dance around it a little bit. I guess, you know, like I could kind of say like, oh, here's an interesting story. And I knew the implications of it, but I just would not allow myself to address those implications. That all fell apart when I saw three owls camping in Grand Teton National Park, actually right near the border of Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming. And 4 days later, I saw three more owls while camping, you know, in a different spot. And as silly as it sounds, right? I mean, just seeing owls at night, I mean, these owls showed up and they flew around us. It's a story I've told 1,000 times, but, in the moment of seeing these owls, I was with the same person both times. There was a palpable sense of, I mean, there was a voice in my head that clearly said, this has something to do with the UFOs. I'm looking at owls. The voice in my head says, this has something to do with UFOs. I never admitted that. That's what I was thinking until years later. But that's what I, you know, that was my sense. And it sort of, all of a sudden, I was just like, oh, like, you know, like the trapdoor fell out from under me. And I started researching owls and totems and shaman animals and you know, ancient mythologies and modern mythologies. You know, and then I, after from that point on, I actively started doing the research. And anytime I would talk to anyone, I would ask them, you know, have you had any odd experiences with owls? And that's the foundation of the book, that one question, you know, simply asking people, have you ever had any odd experiences with owls?
Well, that begs this question. I see Hollywood as a knowledgeable force of intelligence agencies that are trying to detract from reality. So obviously you've seen the fourth kind.
You know, I saw it just specifically for this research. And in the end, so the fourth kind purports to be a documentary, and it has some found footage in it.
It makes it look so real. They make it look so real. Folks, the fourth kind is an entire fabrication.
I'm all for a good publicity hoax like that. I mean, I got no problem with the filmmakers, you know, pulling a little stunt like that. You're allowed to do that. So.
Oh, absolutely. It was well done. I mean, I was totally blown away. But how do you feel about that now? Now that you understand that there is a connection between this UFO, what brought this movie to light? I always wonder that, because I feel like a lot of times I see my work or work about, you know, secret societies and things getting so detracted by people like Dan Brown. And I get mad when I see, you know, the Da Vinci Code, which came out a year after my work, folks. I just want to say that. And you know, here you are almost in the same boat. You're working on this UFO owl connection, which is odd. And then all of a sudden it's wrapped up in the Sumerian tale that's brought forth with the, the movie, The Fourth Kind. How did you feel about that?
Well, the movie came out like right in the dawn of my own looking into this. So that was just as I was starting to form my opinions, like, wait a minute, there really is something to this UFO owl thing. That movie came out. I very quickly kind of realized upon watching the movie that it was the filmmakers had tapped into the literature. I mean, quite, you know, specifically, I think they just read Whitley Strieber's account of which very early on in his book, he talks about an owl that he felt was inside his house. And he told his wife the morning after what now has become the classic bedroom visitation. You know, he told his wife, like, I think there was an owl in the house last night. And she said, no, that's impossible. There was no owl in the house. And if it did come in, it had to come in through this window, and the window was never open. And so they looked at the window ledge, and it had snowed a couple days before. So the window ledge was completely, you know, free of any footprints. I've spoken directly to Whitley Strieber about this, and he said that, you know, like he was very, very poetic and dramatic about how he said it, but he basically said, you know, looking at that window ledge without any footprints, you know, like he knew that something else had happened, and it was, you know, it basically changed his life. So you can go through, you can pull out a stack of UFO books that came out well before The Fourth Kind, and within those books, right, you get a big fat book. There might be a couple paragraphs on owls, and I made a big effort to go and dig through those books and find those paragraphs. So the owl meme was already out there when that movie showed up. And, you know, so my sense is the scriptwriters just said, like, oh, here's an eerie thing, you know, owls, right? Haunted house movies always have owls. You know, you want something scary. So someone walking at night in a movie, and you put the sound effect of a hooting owl, and it just adds to the mood. So this is perfect. You know, owls are kind of creepy looking. And so my sense is that the scriptwriters just added that in as a plot element, having, you know, mined the available UFO literature.
Well, now they absolutely tied this in with Enki and the Sumerian tales. And we go all the way back to the goddess of the night, the Lilith depiction of this clawed foot woman with wings and owls sitting down. And these are one of the earliest representations that we see. But of course, we see the owls in Egypt. We see them throughout the art and architecture of mythology, as we were saying with Athena, Minerva, all the way up to, you know, now. So what have you learned about this owl symbolism throughout time.
Well, what I've learned is it's a bottomless pit, you know, and then using the internet to try to research this is like, you know, I could think of, you know, if I wanted to prove that, you know, whatever, I could, I mean, there's, it's, the owl is so rich with mythology. I think in my sense is the reason it is rich with mythology is because modern, you know, like you can see an owl in the woods. I mean, it's arresting, right? It's got big penetrating eyes. They're very eerie. They fly quietly. They only come out at night. So if you do see one during the day, it's kind of a big deal. You know, I know that. I think ancient man felt that same power. So I think that the owl, just the physical bird, is primed for that kind of heavy drama to be added. You know, you don't have bunny rabbit heavy drama in mythology, a little bit, I guess. But you know that the coyote is a trickster. It's not, doesn't have this heaviness associated with it. So that's my sense, is that, you know, the real being, the real physical owl came first. Now, and then just the, you know, I mean, you can go down the wisdom thing. You can go down the dark omen thing too, and there's like, you know, you can find whatever you want to match your premise. So I was very cautious not to get locked into one avenue of thought and disregard all the others. What my sense is that this owl, when people would ask me, like I was working on the book, you know, people say, so you're working on them. Well, I'm working on a book. Oh, what's it about? Oh, it's about owls. Oh, that's interesting. Owls. What do you mean? What about owls? And I would kind of size the person up and I'm like, oh God, do I bring up the UFO thing? And most often, just out of sheer, like, oh, I don't want to have the 6-hour conversation, I would just say, oh, it's a book on owl mythology, which is true. You know, there's a lot of owl mythology in the book. So, and I would, you know, my premise is that the people are having owl experiences. Not all of them have to do with UFOs. People see owls at funerals, and they see owls when they're meditating. They see owls when they take heavy doses of mushrooms. Actually, I got a lot of examples of that. Huh. So there's this, you know, and I would say that, and then, you know, death, UFO contact, meditation, shamanic initiations, owls show up. These are all alternate states of reality. I mean, I think that the UFO contact experience, and I tried to describe that earlier, that feeling but being between the magnets is an alternate state of reality, and people get dragged into that unwittingly. Also, shamanic initiation, people get dragged into that unwittingly. The owl seems to be the totem animal for the alternate reality. And consequently, step two of that would be the transition, the transformation that takes place in the individual after crossing the line into that alternate reality. So that, my sense is, that's the totem. The owl is the totem animal for that transformative process. And that is happening now. People seeing UFOs and owls, people, you know, meditating and seeing owls. And that it's still, and I'm sure it happened in ancient man. There's something associated with the owl that there's a, I mean, I'm just going to use the word magic. That's a word I'm comfortable with. There's some magic associated with the owl where it arrives synchronistically at these prescient moments in the lives of people as they're having these transformative experiences. You know, the little thing I say, which is a little bit, you know, meant to be purposely kind of provocative, I guess, is that if you have a UFO sighting, if you have a UFO sighting, don't call MUFON, don't call the UFO investigator, call the local shaman. I think you're going to get much more, you're going to be able to address this in much more depth with a shaman. So as far as the owl mythology, my sense is that it's the same thing happening now that happened to ancient man.
Now, did you get a chance to explore any of the Native Americans? Because they openly speak of their star brothers and things. Did you investigate?
You know, I touch on it, and the book, I mean, the book is almost 400 pages, and I touch on some of that. So the owl, especially in the Southwest Native Americans, is considered a kind of a dark omen. I mean, if you see an owl, and I have a couple stories about that, you know, where if you see an owl, it's usually associated with death or being near to death. I had one story. I talked to a guy for a long time he was a Native American guy, and he had been in prison, a lot of tattoos, and he seemed tough guy. And I kind of said, listen, I'm doing this owl research, and it's interesting. Someone had overheard him telling a story, and they grabbed me. Actually, it was Rosemary Ellen Guiley. You must know who she is.
Sure.
She grabbed me and said, "If you see this big Native American guy with tattoos and shaved head, you talk to him because he's got an owl story." And so I just walked up to this guy. I saw him, late at night a couple days later, and at this UFO conference. And I said, "What are you doing at your UFO conference?" And he said, "Oh, it's on the Indian reservation. We have free use of the internet. I just come in here and check my email." So I sat down with him for a little while, and he told a story of at a time where he was heavily into dealing drugs in a very dangerous gang situation, very dangerous chapter of his life. He wouldn't back down from a fight, and a lot of death and a lot of murder in this scene. He was seeing owls everywhere. He would leave his house in the morning, there'd be an owl outside his house. He would go to the gas station, fill up his car, there'd be not the same owl would be at the gas station. He'd go to his friend's house, and the owl would wait outside his friend's house. And it ended up throwing rocks at it. His mother heard about this and said, tied into the Native American lore, like, "Don't you mess with those owls. Don't you mess with them." He later got arrested and cleaned up in prison, and he said the owls haven't been back. So in that story, I mean, he was very clear he was courting death, and that owl was around as a reflection of that, I suspect.
Well, now your book is The Messengers, and my brain immediately connects that to angels just because of the translation, and I study a lot of Hebrew. And so I guess, as you know, we're getting halfway through here. I want to understand the message, the connection between the owl, the UFO, the abduction scenarios, and what you've gotten out of this lately, because this is one of my biggest questions, Mike. You know, this is what drove me, what led me to be here on this microphone. And so I'm dying to know the message.
So the message is, I don't have a message, I don't have an answer. There's no point in the end of the book where I culminate all this stuff and say, "Well, here's the tidy answer that sums it all up." You're not going to get that.
So, yeah.
So in the lore of the owl mythology, all the core myths surrounding the owl kind of draw back to the fact that the owl travels at night, can see into the darkness, and can fly into the darkness. Once again, every person throughout time recognized that. You come out of the cave, you have a very intimate knowledge of the world around you. You knew that about owls. No one had to tell you. So the mythology that emerges from owls is that they can fly into the night and return. And the next step for that would be the metaphor of flying into another realm, flying into another dimension, the land of the dead, the lands of the gods, the land of the ancient ancestors. So, and then the next step would be the owl has to return, and then would often return with a message. And that's what a shaman would do, right? A shaman would go into a trance state, another dimension, whether through rhythmic dancing or mushrooms or ayahuasca, and then return with a message. A seeker would seek out the shaman, ask a question, the shaman would do a ritual, and then come back with a message, a journey. They would journey. So the messenger, that's that. And I got people like saying this to me, and a lot of this came through email, and then I would have long follow-up back and forth email conversations with people, and it would be right in there. They would just say the owl was a messenger. And after that experience, my life changed. Where do you hear that? I don't hear that anywhere else. I suspect there's other experiences. People could probably have experiences with eagles and other animals, like that. But, I was just left with that consistent pattern of people commenting that they were dealing with a messenger. And that just became the title. So the message, on a very simple level, the message that seems to show up, if you had to boil the message down, because it's individual for each person, would be wake up. And very early on, I sort of equated owls with alarm clocks. I mean, that's what an alarm clock does. It wakes you up. So, these are, basically alarm clocks with big wings flying around trying to wake people up is in a very simplistic way. That's the conclusion I come to.
Have you yourself astral traveled?
Not that I know of, no. So, I mean, it's really funny. Like, I'm kind of like other people I know, will say like, oh, like I have this, profound knowing. Oh, like we're in a very special spot. I feel it. We're near a vortex. And I don't get any of that. What I will get is very powerful synchronicities that show up in conjunction with these things. And then I pay attention to those and then try to back engineer those and try to make sense of it. So, yeah, so I don't know if I've actually astral traveled in that true sense. I've certainly had some distorted events happen in my life that just feel super weird and dreamlike in the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And when these synchronicities hit, your body knows. And I'm thinking that with the owl, like I opened with the show, the idea of genetic memory, I mean, it's deep within us. And then there's the mission that you were talking about. And that one, you know, you're on when you get the goosebumps, when those miraculous events all culminate, and you're like, there's no way this could have just happened, but it did.
Exactly. And trying to write about that, you end up using the same words over and over again. I got the little thesaurus on the desk here when I'm writing this stuff, and I'm like, oh God, I'm mystical. How do I like? I can't say that again in this paragraph. I got to use another word. So yeah, so you're dealing with these mystical principles. I'm writing about UFO experiences, and then I'm struggling to find synonyms for mystical.
Right.
That would be, if you go to the, the MUFON investigator. I'm just picturing a guy, with a guy sort of attitude about the world, and then they don't. There's nothing mystical, right? Someone has a report. They see a little dot of light in the sky. They look at their watch. How big is it from arm's length? And then they write all this stuff down, and then they leave. And that's the end of their investigation. Where, all that stuff is important. It's nice to know what time and how big and what they saw. But at the same time, the follow-up question would be, how did your spirituality change? What were you thinking in the moments leading up to this, right? I mean, how many people I've talked to that, like you ask, what were you thinking in the moments leading up to your UFO sighting? And they said, like we had just had a conversation that we wanted to see a UFO. So there's this weird aspect to it where it feels like the owl, listen, I just did it, where it feels like the UFO, I get these things mixed up. I've done that a lot. They're both three letters, UFO, OWL, and I've typed them out incorrectly backwards, forwards so many times, where I'm thinking about one and I'll type out the other. But the UFO seems to interact with our consciousness. And I would say the same thing for the owl. The owl seems to interact with our consciousness at moments, at prescient moments. And why this is, I don't know. All I can do is document the fact that I feel strongly that it does happen and then use the examples that I've collected.
Yeah, wasn't there a guy named Ra or someone like a black gentleman that would be able to call UFOs?
Oh, there's a bunch of folks that claim to be able to call UFOs. I can't remember what this guy's name
This
is. Yeah,
guy
I think
was on the news, that's why he stood
did he,
out.
well, he used to be on Howard Stern's show or something like that. It's kind of they played him for comedy a little bit.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think if I maybe I'm thinking of someone else, so.
Well, I'm curious though, Mike, to know about some of the experiences that you explored. Let's see if we can get those two words together. Because I want to understand what you did to pull together the messengers, then were you out talking to other abductees, trying
I,
to,
yep,
yeah.
talking, all constantly. You know what is interesting? Facebook was just amazing for this research. It just,
Huh.
It was so, so a lot of phone calls, a lot of, back and forth emails, a lot of, trying to make sense of these. What I found is that there's very few folks who have like, oh, I just had this simple thing happen. It just like I looked out the window and I saw this UFO and it wasn't that interesting. And that's the end. That's not how it plays out. It's like, they'll tell that story initially and then they'll kind of under their breath, well, then this other thing happened and then this other thing happened and this happened and then I had this. And it gets so convoluted and it's got this kind of circular logic and it just spins back on into itself. And so it was really hard boiling some of these stories down. I mean, so that on the straight level. Okay, here's one that I just got in, and I get emails all the time after the book. So here's just this is as simple as it gets. Someone goes out and they say, oh, I want to, like they meditate. And they're like, I want to see a UFO, right? And they're in the field and they close their eyes and they open their eyes and they see an owl. That's perfect, right? So that's mixed up like this. Like you ask the universe for one thing, right? I mean, that's like asking Obi-Wan Kenobi for something like that. You know, he's not going to give you exactly what you want. He's going to give you the thing you need or the thing that. So, you know, you ask for a metal spaceship and you get this mystical bird. I have that account a bunch where people do that. And I also have the account where, you know, people will be in the woods. They'll hear an owl hooting and they'll look up in the sky and they'll see a UFO. Or they'll see an owl on a branch, the owl will fly away, and the next thing that flies over is a triangular spacecraft or a triangular craft of some sort. So, you know, there's this, you know, the owl showing up right in the moment. This is ignoring the screen memory aspect completely. These seem to be real owls that people are talking about. I had one little story in mind here that I was going to tell. You know, so this story is going to take about 5 minutes to tell.
Oh, please, please.
Okay, so... These are there's a handful of stories I refer to as back-to-back stories, and they arrived in my email inbox back-to-back. And here's one. This is this woman, Susan Kornacki is her name. She's actually quite outspoken. She'd be a great guest for you. She's really interesting. She's done a lot of consciousness work, and she talks about her contact experiences. And through Facebook, you know, I'd called her on the phone ages ago. Like she was, you know, I just was reaching out to folks. I was at this kind of stressed out point in my life. And through Facebook, she was like, oh, you know, I've got an owl story. Yeah, I'll tell you an owl story. So like, great. And I got a hold of her and this is interesting. Now you're going to love this. So on Good Friday, she starts having this pain in her spine. And she's not Catholic and stuff like that. And she actually said, and I caught it, she said it, she was explaining to me, it was the Friday before Easter, because the real thing happened on Easter Sunday. But on the Friday before Easter, I had this pain in my back and I was really hurt and I couldn't function. And I was like, what, am I getting crucified? And I kind of laughed. And she said, what are you laughing about? I'm like, well, like, you know, Good Friday crucifixion, that's the day. Really? And she was totally oblivious to it. So, and then she has an experience on Easter Sunday where she's at a family party, and then she feels like what she said is a Tesla coil going up and down her spine, exploding. And she was freaking out, and she looked at her husband at the time and said, I got to go. I got to leave. And so the husband was going to drive home separately with the kids or with her daughter. And then so she went home alone to deal with this. She didn't know what was going on, this crazy thing, which sounds, I mean, I don't know, but she's sounds like she's describing a Kundalini awakening. So she goes to her hammock in the backyard. The hammock is tied between two trees. She lies in the hammock. And as soon as she lies down, a owl lands on the tree at her feet and another owl lands at the tree at her head, right? So she's in between these two trees. One owl's hooting, the other owl's hooting. These owls are hooting like crazy. She's in between. She's like, this is so weird. And she said very clearly that she felt an energy coursing through her. The only way I just picture like two components or three components on a circuit board, right? Plugged in, and the components are doing this little electronic thing. One of them is an owl in a tree. The other one is an owl in a tree. And clicked in between these two components is Susan Kornacki in her hammock, you know, like being recharged by these kind of owl battery chargers or whatever. Her husband comes home. And she says, what do you see? And he says, well, I see an owl in that tree, and I see an owl in that tree, and they're hooting. And she's like, uh-huh. After this event, she started doing like hands-on healing. And she kind of implied it was similar to Reiki. She said, it's not quite like Reiki, but it's hands-on healing. So she started doing hands-on healing after this event with these two owls basically charging her up. It's so visual to me. So that story arrived one day. And then the next day, I get this other story, and this is from a woman. Her name is Kelly, and she is in her backyard on her hammock, and she's looking up into. Now she's had some odd experiences in her life that certainly imply and point to the UFO contact thing, you know. So she's very cautious the way she talks about her own experiences. So it's not up to me to put words in her mouth, but she's very clear that she suspects strongly that she's had this kind of UFO contact in her life. She's on her hammock. She's looking up at the sky, and she's kind of in this state of anxiety. And she's like, I just need a sign. I just need some sort of confirmation. So she's done something that she's done before. She just closed her eyes. She said, okay, I want something special to happen. I want some sort of confirmation to happen. So her eyes are closed, and she counts down from 10. She opens her eyes. There's nothing. She tries it a few times. Close her eyes, count down from 10, nothing. And then her son is in the yard and runs up and climbs in the hammock with her. And the son, I think, is 9 or 10. And the kid's like, you know, mommy, what are you doing? She's like, well, I'm just playing this little game where I close my eyes and I just kind of, you know, try to see what will happen. And he's like, ooh, can I do it? Can I do it? And she goes, sure. And without any prep, you know, with no prepping from her, the little boy says, they close their eyes and the little boy says, dear God, can we see a UFO? And they open their eyes and there's this shiny crystalline sort of diamond object hovering in the sky just at the edge of the tree line off in the distance. And she says, you know, the first thing she did was told her son to run in the house and get the binoculars. So she's lying in the hammock watching this kid runs into the house, you know, pet, runs back with the binoculars. They both sit there and look at this thing through the binoculars. And, you know, she describes it as like a crystalline reflecting semi-transparent object that is reflecting all the colors in the spectrum, including colors that no one has ever seen. Something I've heard before. And then her husband comes home, very similar to the other account. Her husband comes home, says, oh, what's going on? And she says, oh, here, look through the binoculars. And the husband's sort of a doubter, as was the other husband. And he takes the binoculars. And as this thing kind of moves off in the sky, he needs to walk around the yard to get a better view, right? So the thing is dipping down behind the trees. So he has to walk up onto the porch and get a higher view. And so these two stories arrive back to back, right? They're not really all that dramatic in the sense of like whatever. It's not like a hovering flying saucer on a lonely dark road taking people in through the door and then, you know, putting them on the table. That's not happening in these two accounts. But there's just the parallel of these two are so weird. Now, I will also say that if Susan Kornacki and this woman Kelly were sitting in the room together, you would just assume they were sisters. Not quite twin sisters, but very close. They look remarkably alike. And they, at the time of these events, one of them has since moved. Susan Kornacki now lives in Hawaii. But at the time of these events, they lived 44 miles apart. And the weird sort of synchronistic cloud, as I was asking these questions and doing this research, it was so powerful for me that these stories arrived back to back. I have a bunch of examples in the book that is a chapter. It was actually my favorite chapter in the book is called Back-to-Back Stories, where these accounts that mirror each other, they're not exactly the same, but they're flipped in this perfect way, will arrive back-to-back, often less than 24 hours of each other. And that for me, had its own form of confirmation. It was just too coincidental to be, I mean, it had to have been there for a purpose. And my sense is the purpose was to, you know, convince me that, you know, this is very real and there's a very real power to these stories.
Amazing. And to share a little bit with that, since we talked years ago and I explored my abduction story with you, I have also used Facebook and went hunted down the friend that was with me back in 1993. And I found him on Facebook, and I was like, oh my God, there you are. And I was like, hey. And it turns out, from what you're saying, it turns out that me and this guy, Eric, have lived in the exact same places at the exact same time, not knowing it. He is currently living 2 hours from me right now. He lived in Austin while I lived in Austin. He lived in Kansas while I lived in Kansas. And now he lives in South Carolina while I'm in South Carolina. And it's blowing me away. Another thing that has just popped into my head, and I don't know why I'm going to throw this in, but I've been thinking about it, is that all of these end of the world TV shows that have come out, like Revolution, The Walking Dead, and some others that I can't think of off the top of my head, they all start in Lawrence, Kansas. And they were all occurring while I was living there. Now I've moved to Greenville, South Carolina. And I don't know if you saw the final Mein Kampf X-Files. But they're going. The smoking man lives 20 minutes from my house.
Except in Canada, they filmed it in location in Canada. So they're driving around. That always made me crazy when they were like, you know, like, they're like, let's, you know, like they're driving around. They're like rural Virginia. And it was like, that looks suspiciously like Vancouver.
Right. You know, yeah. So, yeah. It's so true. They just sewed the street sign from Greenville to Spartanburg.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And yeah. But, you know, here I am now. And, you know, so we're talking about the idea that Hollywood is really out there manipulating the minds of the public to keep them from understanding the type of shamanistic experiences that you're talking about, the mystical experiences and the understanding that comes from being in a galactic community and having something going on with all of us. I mean, we don't know. Like you say, so many of us sit here and think, well, I'm pretty sure this has been going on all my life, but of course we have no memory of it. And the experiences that we do have, we battle with in our own minds. And so we're pulling this all together now, trying to weave this tale, and I completely lost where I was going with this whole thought.
Oh, just the synchronistic strangeness of like finding people on Facebook. Yeah. I mean, it just seems like there's like a sentient, you know, interconnected neurons of the internet that seem to like tap right into our consciousness, right? I mean, everyone's got Wi-Fi and we're walking through this cloud of information. And I mean, it's just, I think it's like a synchronistic generating, you know, or it encourages the synchronicities, this kind of cloud intelligence.
Yeah, you got to have a childlike mind in order for these things to occur. You've got to be a playful child that wants to sit down and say, please God, show me a UFO, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that was so interesting that, I mean, she was forcing it, you know, she was gritting her teeth, trying to make it happen. And the boy just, you know, just out of his playful nature, you know, what he, you know, was he it's incantated. He made an incantation, I guess. So
with the mind of a child, just as religion would tell you. Now, folks, there's no denying the fact that religion has boiled up out of nomadic shamans that have been wandering around having UFO experiences like Ezekiel.
Or Jesus. I mean, he was born under the, you know, the star, the, you know, the.
Exactly.
The Star of Bethlehem, yeah. So and his mother had like a, you know, a bedroom visitation by this glowing
right.
being, and then she was miraculously pregnant. So I mean that's in every UFO book, yeah. So
yeah, Noah was some weird you know, contraption coming out all white and freaking people out. Yeah, you know, this story shows you that there is a mystical experience in this whole situation. We've dug into the idea of dimethyltryptamine, DMT, which really is a death trip. It's enacting the same chemical reaction that you have while you're born or you die. We've realized now that there is this magnetic polarity that occurs during these situations that seem to be matrix hacking, if you will, by these beings, and then our reality is completely always altered forever. The way we experience life is altered forever, and we start to find that this plays a large role in life on planet Earth, and it's completely ignored or marginalized by Hollywood, which takes these ideas and gives you movies like The Fourth Kind or X-Files that just lead you really away from the urban shamans that we all really need to become, the experiencers that we need to become. And Mike McClellan, I always want to call you McClellan.
Oh, everyone does. It is, right? If you say Mike Clellan fast enough, it does turn into McClellan.
McClellan.
So,
yeah. So. So that's Mike Clellan, folks. Yes. C-L-E-L-L-A-N-D. And the book, The Messengers, with his website, hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. And we're going to take this story further now, folks. For the members, we're going to just lift this up and start to share deeper insights of Mike and myself. I like to get a little more homey there in the members section and go ahead and release some of my own personal experiences, thoughts, and theories on things. And, you know, get a little more personal with you all. So if you want to join in, please subscribe to freemantv.com. We've got this new, bold, beautiful website that's just awesome. And I want to thank Alonzo and David Boozer for putting that together. Alonzo Pichardo, let me get his name in there right. And yes, guys, I will get your names up on the website so everybody knows where to go to get such an awesome website. And Mike, I will definitely recommend these guys to you. David and Alonzo did an excellent job revamping freemantv.com and turning it into an amazing amazing thing. So get on over there now, folks, freemantv.com. Subscribe so that you can get the rest of this 2 hours and learn. And then also, you're keeping me going so that you guys can keep getting all the free information, because it's not free to me, folks. So, you know, chip in, help out, do whatever you got to do, share, love, care, do all that. Don't let the haters win, because they're the ones clicking the thumbs, folks. I need your thumbs out there clicking to battle against the haters and to share this with more and more people, so we can start to really develop ourselves and understand what our community is. Because what you got here with Mike Cleland and myself are a couple of urban shamans that are seeking knowledge that will transform life on planet Earth as we know it. So, Mike, let's throw out some final messages, thoughts, and theories for these folks as we wrap this up and move over to the members section.
Aye, final thoughts.
I know.
Yeah. So, it's this book. I'm just going to talk about the book, because that's rather than the this book was produced in this synchronistic cloud that people have commented on reading it. They say it's palpable. Like, you can sense the sort of, because it flows in this kind of almost like nonlinear form. I wish it had like a beginning, middle, and end. It doesn't. I don't want to say a slowly chipping away at the old reality. And then hopefully, if I've done my job right as a writer, like by the time you get to the conclusion of the book, I hopefully you'll have your eyes opened a little bit and you can tap into this stranger reality that will be, you know, that is chipped away little by little. I mean, there's hundreds of accounts. I mean, I've shared a few of them here, but there are hundreds of accounts of owls connected with most of the core of the book is UFO stuff, but then it goes into death and shamanistic practices and psychedelic mushrooms and things like meditation. So there's this aspect of the book that, you know, that even though it says UFO abductee right on the cover, you know, I push beyond that and then say that there are these other parallel experiences that mimic or mirror the UFO contact experience. And so it was a huge deal for me to write the book people seem to be getting a lot back from it, and that makes me feel so like all the hard work was worthwhile.
Yeah, that is no easy task. You know, yeah, that is amazing. That I have a feeling that you're going to get so inundated now with messengers and messages that book 4, 5, and 6 are already probably piling up there on your
desk. Well, book 2 is piling up, but you know, so that was just leftover stuff that I couldn't fit in this book. So that's what book 2 is. So
that's why I jumped to 4. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know how, like, I might have to, yeah, who knows what the future will bring, but I'm kind of owled out at this point. So
sure, we got to keep finding the mystery and understanding our own purpose here, and that's probably where it'll all direct to, right?
Yeah. Deer, that's actually the next one. Someone's got to write a book on deer. You know, it's not my direct experience, but deer are just as rich with mythology and lots of very powerful experiences, yeah.
That's true, and again, often shown with the goddess. I just find this
Yeah, that's
curious.
Right, yeah, Diana, yeah, so yeah, so...
Huh. A quick thought, though. What do you think about Bohemian Grove?
I write about it in the book, and I'm very cautious, because I mean, the sort of, you know, you use the internet to research this stuff. It's like, oh my god, it's like, you know, are they drinking the blood of babies or what's going on there? You know, I mean, it's so. I mean, because you can certainly, if you want to, I mean, that's written out there. I mean, you can find it and quote it online. I don't know how reliable that is as an actual fact, but. You know, like years ago when I was doing this outdoor work, I met a young guy who worked at Bohemian Grove. He was a waiter in the restaurants there. They had like, you know, they have like lodges and restaurants, and he was a waiter there, and he had to sign some non-disclosure thing, and he didn't say much. And I was like, oh my God, you worked at Bohemian Grove? What happened? What was it like? And he's like, well, you know, quite honestly, like everyone just got so liquored up. And that's one of the things I've heard, is just like this body, like just alcohol infused, you know, descent into madness, you know, yeah. So they're all drunk basically, you know, and shooting guns and liquor. So yeah, walking around with guns, shooting them at the redwood trees. So the Bohemian Grove thing was, you know, cause everyone calls the owl Moloch, and if Moloch is a bull, not an owl.
Okay, let me just say that I set Alex Jones straight on that whole thing, and you'll see in his new movie, he's like, oh, well, it's related to the goddess, but yeah, Moloch. Yeah, I railed on him. And, you know, it's amazing just to throw this little thing in for people to understand how these mythologies expand and build and things like that. You know, Alex is the only person who's ever equated the owl at Bohemian Grove to Moloch. And of course, Alec was the first person to go in and film it. So, you know, he only had Moloch to go on. He didn't know about Columbia, Minerva, or any of this stuff. And so now it's like this epic battle to destroy that piece of false information that made it into the consciousness. I've been trying for 11 years, Mike.
Wow, how interesting, because that was, you know, because, I mean, well, like, whatever, like, you know, the, how to say, like, whatever, a truth, a lie goes around the world before a truth has a time to put its shoe, you know, tie its shoelaces. Yeah. So, and then the, so, you know, I don't have a good answer to that. And then, you know, and there's a, you can just go on the website of the Bohemian Grove, and they got a big owl on the website, and they got pictures of the inside of the, you know, of like people having, you know, banquets and dinners, and there's all kinds of owl things on their things, and you can, so, you know, there's owl stuff, and right on the outside of the building there's a picture of an owl. And I'm doing this from the top of my head, and there's a little phrase that says,
weaving spiders come not here.
Exactly, yeah, weaving spiders.
I actually busted into the Bohemian Club. You can watch it on YouTube.
Oh, did you do it with a video camera? And...
Oh, yeah. Esoteric Adventures in San Francisco.
Okay, and right across from this, is it called the White Owl or something like that? There's an owl bar right across the street. Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, there's a bar right across the street. It's, you know, where I found that. I found that on Google Earth Street View.
Okay.
You know, so you're like, here's the Bohemian Club building, and you turn the camera around, and right kitty corner to it is this bar called the White Owl.
Well, we were just about to ding-dong ditch Michael Aquino as we were driving past his house in a limousine, and then instead decided, well, actually, Jamie wouldn't let us ding-dong ditch Michael Aquino, so we moved on and decided to go harass the fellas there at the Bohemian Club. And, I mean, yeah, we stormed right in just with our cameras blazing, a bunch of crazy kids just like, hey, what's up? And they immediately threw us out and started screaming Homeland Security. And, of course, we have this all on film for all you folks to enjoy. So please dig around freebatv.com, because there's a lot of stuff there, man. I've done, you know, my fair share of fun.
Yeah, there's something online where someone did a little more stealthy. They kind of, you know, walked around, and
well,
they
this
had the,
was
you know,
the club, not the Grove.
Yeah. This is the club. This is the building in downtown San Francisco. Yeah. So yeah, and so weaving spiders come not here is a myth of, you know, from ancient Greece, where Athena, the goddess not only of wisdom but of arts and crafts, meets a woman, and the woman, they kind of have a they have a weave off, you know what I mean? They're both trying to weave a tapestry, and the woman weaves a better and more beautiful tapestry than Diana, and she's all annoyed, and she turns the woman into a spider, and the woman's name was Arachnia, and that's where I think where we get the term arachnid. Obviously. Even today, so you know, there's like whatever, there's thing was formed 100 years ago, and folks were studying Greek mythology then. I you know, who knows how you know, where the surface story is and where the deep story is, you
well
know?
Let's so. Realize it, folks, this owl symbolism goes all the way back to the Queen of the Night, our earliest depictions of some sort of witch-like being, often equated to Lilith, but in the museum simply depicted as Queen of the Night. We have her standing there depicted on the branches with an owl on one side and the owl on the other, very much like Susan's story. You know, we have this owl that has followed us throughout time, throughout mythology, and throughout all kinds of mystical experiences, through every culture on this planet. And we know for a fact that we throw fake owls on top of buildings because it is a genetic memory marker to all beings out there. And now you might understand why there is an owl at Bohemian Grove. Not sure, but we realize that this is a very, very deep message lying throughout all of society on planet Earth. So Mike and I are going to get deep and dirty into some more crazy stuff. Believe me, you want to be a member. And so sign up today. It really isn't anything. I think it's 20 cents a day, and you'll get a lot from it. Not only that, you'll be giving a lot to everyone because it allows me to just keep broadcasting. So thank you all for tuning in. And those of you who subscribed, thank you so much. I just don't even know. I love you all the same. You know, but let's move on over to the members section, guys. We'll see you all next week.